In the days of 18 and 1, pagan all. In the days of 18 and 1, pagan all. In the days of 18 and 1, pagan shoes was all I'd done. Hand me down my pegs, my pegs, my pegs, my all. In the days of 18 and 2, pagan all. In the days of 18 and 2, pagan all. In the days of 18.
Well, welcome to After Hours with me, Rick Hogan. Because it is Labor Day tomorrow, and because we forget, I think, the meaning of Labor Day, I'm playing some Pete Seeger singing great American industrial ballads for the first hour of the show. And for this first half hour, it's my great pleasure to welcome Dorothy Dot Coyle and Amy Cozera. Hi.
Hi.
What do you think of the new studios? This was my first question of every show.
Oh my gosh, they're beautiful. The views.
Yeah.
Pretty incredible.
Amy, we've known each other for only a couple years because you're involved with the Pulmonary Fibrosis Awareness Month, the Pulmonary Fibrosis Organization. You have grown so much in the last 2 years. I couldn't be. I know it's not my doing, but it is your doing, isn't it?
Well, thank you. It's the doing of our entire team. So we have a staff of about 35, most located in our Streeterville office, which is just a few blocks from here. And it's really been a team effort to bring some of these treatments and patient programs forward.
I need, as I always do, because I know, but I need to tell the listeners what pulmonary fibrosis is. And in order to do that, I think we should go to a medical expert.
Absolutely.
Dr. Daniel Dilling, a pulmonologist at Loyola University Medical Center, is on the phone. Dr. Dilling, how are you?
Hi, good evening.
Good evening to you. Could you describe in layman's terms what pulmonary fibrosis is, please?
Pulmonary fibrosis is a scarring disease of the lungs that can be caused by various causes, but one of the most common, I guess, is something called idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis. In any event, pulmonary fibrosis causes gradual scarring of the lungs, shortness of breath that can occur and become worse over the course of months to years. It can be a reason for someone to need oxygen. It can be a reason for someone to need a lung transplant.
Oof.
And it even is life-threatening, and there can be flare-ups.
It just seems
to be a reason for someone to go into the hospital and have a threat to their life. So it's a really serious disease that is important to be aware of.
Well, that's one of the things I want to talk about with you and Amy and Dot. The awareness of this disease as of about 5 years ago was not well known. And it was probably, I mean, you sound like a good doctor, but it was also probably difficult to diagnose, was it not?
Indeed, it's an unusual, even you might say, a rare type of lung disease. It's one that is not unheard of, and it's one that we all need to be aware of, and it's one that's becoming, I guess, more well recognized over time than it used to be. Part of the reason for that is that, for various medical reasons, we're all getting CAT scans at a for reasons that are maybe wouldn't have been so years ago. Just CAT scans are more common, and so we find pulmonary fibrosis perhaps accidentally, and that's a good thing to become aware of it earlier than might otherwise be known. But additionally, I think the public and the medical community are also more in tune with the possibility of pulmonary fibrosis and looking for it, and doctors and the patients and their families can be, if they're aware of it, can perhaps come to the diagnosis earlier, which is to a benefit to all.
Let me ask you, what are the symptoms? I mean, if one someone said a little shortness of breath, I mean, but that happens to a lot of people. What are the other symptoms of pulmonary fibrosis that might compel a person to consult a medical professional?
Well, indeed, you're exactly right. shortness of breath is the most common symptom, but shortness of breath is also nonspecific. It can be caused from a whole variety of reasons, problems with your heart, other problems with your lungs. Anemia even can cause shortness of breath. So there are lots of reasons for shortness of breath, and it shouldn't be automatically a trigger for diagnosing somebody with pulmonary fibrosis. But it should be a trigger to think about things more. It should be a trigger to examine people a little differently, and it should be a trigger for maybe some extra testing to be done in some cases. And so cough can also be a symptom of pulmonary fibrosis. Shortness of breath, as you said, can be. And low oxygen levels can be as well. But all three of those things are also very nonspecific.
Sure.
So none of those things by themselves should say pulmonary fibrosis. But a primary care doctor or a specialist who listens carefully to the lungs and can hear crackles in the bases of the lungs, especially subtle crackles in the base of the lungs, that can be a very, very strong trigger, I think, to jump more fully into testing to look for pulmonary fibrosis.
Let me ask you, as
I hinted at a few minutes ago, CAT scans or x-rays even can have subtle hints of pulmonary fibrosis that might be sort of ignored if they're obtained in the context of like sort of different problems, problems with the heart or even problems with the abdomen. And so I've met patients through my career that had a CAT scan a few years ago or an x-ray a few years ago that had some subtle changes, but because there were bigger fish to fry at the time, the pulmonary fibrosis was tucked in the background, only to come back to consciousness later. So I think it's important for us to have an awareness of the possibility.
Sure,
but
sure, no
like
question.
I said, everyone who has shortness of breath, everyone that smoked, and everyone that coughs doesn't have pulmonary fibrosis.
It's a good idea for someone with any kind of symptoms like that to ask their healthcare professional. Perhaps could this be? I mean, I'm all for a active patients and patients who question stuff. Amy, since the time you've been involved with this, have you the growth of this is obviously part of your helping with the foundation make people more aware of this, yes?
Sure, absolutely. So we just started our Pulmonary Fibrosis Awareness Month this September. I kicked it off yesterday. So we have a number of initiatives and programs that we are trying to get people involved in as an opportunity to create more visibility for the disease.
You also have a growing network of care centers.
We do.
Of which Loyola, Dr. Dilling, is one of them. I know you're not in charge of pulling the trigger, perhaps, on starting a care unit out there. But tell me about the importance of those, would you?
Sure. And Dr. Dilling, maybe you can jump in and help me. The care center network is a really great opportunity for our patients to get a really highly specialized level of care.
Mm-hmm.
And this year we expanded our network across the country. So we have 60 centers.
No across, way.
Yeah. So we added 15 in May that we're really excited about.
Wow. Dr. Dilling, is this, I don't want to make it appear as if this is some kind of epidemic. I think that it's probably just the increased awareness that is making for better diagnoses. Would you agree? Or is it an epidemic
Absolutely,
of some?
I'd agree.
Okay.
I'd say that shortness of cough and once smoked should not automatically be assumed to have COPD or asthma and be given inhalers. I think every patient in that situation should have a careful examination, like I said,
mm-hmm.
and also probably a spirometry test, which is a type of breathing test that looks for a pattern of obstruction or restriction that would sort of push a doctor towards a diagnosis of COPD or pulmonary fibrosis. And so I think it's really important for that awareness to be out there. And I think the care center networks help in increasing awareness. But I also think that when a patient is diagnosed with pulmonary fibrosis, the care center networks and specialists in pulmonary fibrosis or interstitial lung disease, which is a broader term, can more carefully look into the possibilities of whether this disease is one that's caused by an autoimmune disease or an environmental exposure, or this disease that I referred to already as idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis, because it's there's subtleties that are there, and the importance of getting the right diagnosis is very high, because the prognosis is different and the treatments are different.
Well, you've been, Dr. Daniel Dilling, you have been remarkably enlightening to me. You're the pulmonologist at Loyola University Medical Center. And I will tell you something now, doctor. If I ever have shortness of breath, you are going to be the first person I call. There's no question about that. Thank you so much for joining us and being so articulate in a fashion that anybody could understand. And that's not always true. I know a lot of doctors, and some of them, they always sound like they're speaking a foreign language to me, and you were speaking English. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you. That's a very nice compliment.
Well, my pleasure. You're a very good doctor. Expect a call from me one of these days, because I'm going to, God knows what I'm going to wind up with as I age. But thank you so much again. We're going to take a little break, get a couple commercials in, and then we'll continue on with Amy Kozera and Dot Coyle talking about Pulmonary Fibrosis Awareness Month. That guy was great. The Steve Cochran Show celebrates the most valuable person on the planet weekday mornings at 720 on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users, just say play WGN on TuneIn. That will help you out in more ways than one. Then also make Sundays your official night to tour the city. Watch Chicago's Best at 10 o'clock, the dumbest commercial in the history of this show. This show is on at 10. You won't be watching this show, but then stick around, tape it. Then stick around for the latest in shopping, entertainment, and events on See Chicago at 10:30 on WGN-TV. I am back with my great old friend, Dot Coyle, and my new friend, newly married, Amy Kozera. September is Pulmonary Fibrosis Awareness Month, and I must tell you, that doctor was fantastic, because he just told me that there can be all sorts of symptoms for this, but just ask your doctor. You know, it's not going to kill you to say, could this be this? Talk also for a second, Amy, about this the care network that keeps expanding exponentially.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have three care centers in the Chicagoland area. Dr. Dilling from Loyola is one of our newer, as we expanded the network, they came in under the fold. We also have care centers at Northwestern and University of Chicago.
Is it difficult to get to enlist care centers? I'm thinking that it's such a... What do you have to do to enlist these hospitals to join your network?
So they have to submit an application, and that goes through review of our medical team. Then they analyze the program and determine if they're ready to enter the network or not. And in some cases, they'll go back and suggest improvements, and then we find ways to partner with them.
Yeah, it's a collaborative. It's a real collaborative effort. And this month is a big one for you. I haven't told you. Pulmonaryfibrosis.org is the website where you can get tons of information. But September is the big deal for you. I mean, buildings, whose idea was that? Dot, were you part of that? Buildings in Chicago, when you see a blue building, and you're going to see a lot of them, this is because in honor of or in support of Pulmonary Fibrosis Awareness Month.
I am proud to say that Chicago has the most buildings that are going blue across the country. Tonight, it's the Superdome in New Orleans. But also right here in Chicago, the Palmer House Hilton is blue. They started yesterday. And then we have, will you tell them about the Weekend of the Walk, Amy?
Yeah, that's the majority of our buildings. So Palmer House Hilton, the 150 North Michigan Avenue, right on the corner of Michigan and Randolph, Soldier Field, Navy Pier, and the Wrigley Building are all going blue the weekend of our walk.
And the Ferris wheel, too, right?
Yeah, the Ferris wheel.
Now, how is it, Amy, when you go to these places and these institutions and say, hey, how would you like to be blue for the month of September, or blue for a week, or blue for a day? What kind of due diligence do they do with you? Or they just say, hey, Dot, you want us to be blue, we'll be blue. It can't be... You do have to, again, it's a matter of awareness, and you have to explain what this is, right?
Yeah, and we're really very fortunate. Mayor Emanuel proclaimed that September is Pulmonary Fibrosis Awareness Month in Chicago, and so we have a generous corporate community in the city, and so when we go to various institutions, attractions. The John Hancock Center is going to go blue the weekend of the 21st to the 23rd. So this disease affects 200,000 people, and it's serious. And so, you know, they're very generous, like I said, in terms of giving us a day or a couple of dates that they'll shine blue. And the community loves it. It really helps unite
people. See, what encourages me is there are a lot of foundations out there for a lot of medical causes. And to be a relatively new one and still get the kind of happy reception that you're getting from these institutions, Amy, that must make you proud, because it's always difficult to start from the ground up.
We do, and we are a newer foundation.
Sure.
We started in 2000, and in a very short amount of time, we've done some very big things. So the Care Center is just one piece of that. We also have a patient registry. We launched an app this year. We have a clinical trial finder. We have support groups. We have ambassadors. We have the walk, which was brand new last year. We have all these buildings turning blue, and just so many great opportunities to bring more visibility and awareness to this disease.
Tell me a little. We let Dr. Dilling go, but you guys are qualified to tell me this one. One is diagnosed with pulmonary fibrosis. What is the outlook?
So expected survival rate upon diagnosis is 3 to 5 years right now.
Mm-hmm.
But it's such a large disease that can really vary based on your prognosis and when you are diagnosed. So I've had families that someone has been diagnosed and quickly has passed, and I've had families that someone was diagnosed 15 years ago and is still doing well.
I am assuming, not being a doctor, of course, that early diagnosis is beneficial for everybody involved. The earlier you can catch this thing,
it absolutely
the
is.
Better the chances. How did you get involved?
That's a great question. So I started with the foundation 2 years ago, and I've been in fundraising basically my entire career. I was recruited over to the foundation, and when I accepted the offer, I learned that my now husband's grandfather had passed away from the disease, and 6 months ago, my grandmother was diagnosed. So it's become very personal for me very quickly, as both sides of our family have
passed. I also think, and I know the doctor didn't want to get too deep into this, but I think that with diagnosis getting to be easier and people being more aware of this, you are likely to have more diagnoses of this specific problem. Because I'm sure every doctor out there is unbelievably capable and good, but I think this is something that can be easily overlooked or misdiagnosed.
It happens often.
Yeah, yeah. What now, when you come back next year, you will have... every building in the city will be blue, because I still think when he first met, it was before the first walk. And what is the walk? This is the second annual walk coming up. It's on September what?
15th. So Saturday, September 15th at Diversity Harbor. It's a 1 or 3 mile course. Registration's free. If you raise $100 more, you get a t-shirt, which is really fun. And it's a great family-friendly day for us to celebrate and unite as a community and have an opportunity for our patients to share their stories and feel like they're a part of something.
Are people embarrassed by this disease on any level?
That's a great question. If you're on supplemental oxygen, that can be difficult sometimes.
Is that where you have to walk with a...
Yeah, depending on how much you need. So it can either be a small purse-like device, where it would be like a larger bag that you can just put on your shoulder and it has portable oxygen. Or some patients are on canisters where they have to carry a canister with them. So it depends.
One of the things also that one always looks for in any kind of foundation is a famous spokesperson. He was working his behind off last year for you guys, wasn't he? Who was that?
Jordan Howard.
That he's not the highest paid bear anymore. I remember talking to him when you brought him on, and he got involved. Why?
His father passed away when he was young. So Jordan's dad passed when Jordan was 12 years old, I believe.
Yeah.
So about 11 years ago, it'll be 12 in January. And when he got drafted to the Bears, it seemed very, like a natural fit for him. The fact that we have one office, we're headquartered in Chicago, and he was drafted to the Chicago Bears as a rookie. It was just a symbiotic relationship that they reached out to us immediately, and he's been a tremendous advocate for us.
Oh, yeah, and he's also a charming kid, too. I mean, that's the other thing about him. He's very sincere, and it's very, very, for him, heartfelt. Heartfelt. How many people do you expect to be at the walk?
Anywhere between 750 and 1,000. Okay. So we are hoping for a good turnout this year again, and we are aiming to raise $245,000.
I think you'll do it because you, Amy Cozera, newly married, that hasn't changed your attitude. You look better. That's all. You look better.
Thank you.
Congratulations to you and your husband and Dot, you with all your kids. Look for blue buildings, ladies and gentlemen. Even if you're traveling nationally, there will be blue buildings in New York, and there are blue buildings in Washington. Most of the blue buildings will be in Chicago. Yeah. Palmer House is already blue. You'll have Navy Pier. You'll have the Ferris Wheel Navy Pier, the Wrigley Building just across from these fancy studios, the John Hancock Center, 150 North Michigan, and Soldier Field. Maybe perhaps Mr. Howard had something to do with that. Ladies, it's always fun to catch up, and the great thing about it is when we catch up there, it's almost always good news. You know what I mean?
Yes,
it is.
You people out there can go to pulmonary fibrosis. I'm not going to spell it for you because I know we have a smart, smart audience. pulmonaryfibrosis.org. Dot Coyle, Amy Cozera. Thank you both.
Thank you, Rick.
Thank you both. It is always great fun to talk to you.
I lost my eyes in the blacksmith shop in the year of 56 while dusting out a tea planch which was out of fix. It bounded from the tongs and there concealed my doom. I am a blind fiddler and far from my home.
That is the voice of Pete Seeger from an incredible CD, actually. Pete Seeger sings American Industrial Ballads, and I'm doing that because tomorrow is Labor Day, and I think we have a tendency to forget that what went into even having a Labor Day. Sitting across from me now is my friend Richard Reeder, who has had a long and varied career. But at this point in his career, I am calling him not just a he's been a teacher, he's been an executive, he's been all kinds of things, but he is now an author. And his latest book is 1,000 Train Rides in Chicago, with a beautiful illustration and 64 terrifically compelling and short takes on fictional characters as if encountered on the 8 L lines in this town, all of which you know. Richard, you do a lovely job in the welcome to the show first. And
Thank you, Rick.
You do a lovely job in the introduction of talking about your familiarity and even affection for the mass transit system of the city of Chicago. You've been at this for a long time, haven't you?
Taking it for over 64 years.
Yeah. And you did, the interesting thing for me is you write in here, I'm going to read one of the stories for you people. But you also write in here that you were one to be giving innocent, furtive glances at the people that you encountered on the mass transit system, and taking these types of glances and accumulating memories of them for the 60-plus years. What you've done here, it seems to me, not only an homage to Ben Hecht and 1001 Afternoons in Chicago, is you have used your imagination combined with your sort of work history and the astonishing number of people you met in your work, your various jobs over the years. You met the same kind of cross-section of people, Chicagoans.
Absolutely. Immigrants, a lot of immigrants. I worked in refugee programs for many years. When I worked at the Mayor's Office of Employment and Training, we work with people who were laid off from work. I think you're going to be reading a story of one of those. It's Labor Day, so I think this is a good story for Labor Day coming up. I was just, you know, trying to give a voice to some of these anonymous folks that ride the train. You know, nowadays, so many, you know, being an older guy, you know, I look around and I see just everybody looking at their mobile phones,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Nobody's even noticing yeah. other people next to them.
No, that's yeah. one of the things that struck me about the book. Again, there are 64, very short, none are more than a couple pages long, imaginative takes on people that you have given, to whom you have given names mm-hmm. as well. I will, in second segment, after we take a break, read one of these. You seem to me to be kind of a born writer, Richard. I know that probably isn't true, and I know that's a hackneyed kind of phrase. When did you start to write seriously? I mean, I remember the previous book done with this
yeah.
fine illustrator. When did that start for you?
I started to write seriously at 65. You know, Grandma Moses, Grandpa Moses.
Sure,
right? You know,
sure,
That kind of thing. Yeah, I just...
What compelled you? What was the sort of cathartic moment for you?
Well, I've always read a lot.
Yeah, sure.
And I always, you know, I appreciated good writing, both fiction and nonfiction. And I think if you appreciate writing, I think you want to write. I mean, we all have stories.
Sure.
We all have
no question.
We all have stories to tell.
No question.
So I've always been telling great anecdotes for years, and I've had that talent. But I wanted to give a try to actually write.
How did you find it at first? Because sometimes it is very, very difficult. I know people who can sit on a bar stool and spin the most amazing stories in the world, and they freeze up over a typewriter or a keyboard, because it is a vastly different form.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It just came. In my case, I started doing a blog. I still do it.
Yes, you do.
Yeah, I call it a literary reader, R-E-E-D-E-R, and
.wordpress.com.
Yeah, yeah. That's right. And I started teaching some classes. I pitched myself at the Oakton Community College
sure.
In their emeritus program, and I started teaching literature courses. And I had a student in my class, Bob Boone.
Okay, I know Bob Boone, one of the great mentors in the history of Chicago literature, also the founder of Young Chicago Authors, has a wonderful jacket quote on the back of this. Bob was in the class?
Bob was in my Sal Bello short stories class.
Wow.
And Bob looked at the blog and said, you could write. And, yeah, so why don't you expand these blog posts? And that eventually became Chicago Sketches.
Well, that's very empowering to hear that from Bob.
Yeah.
Was he your first reader? Who's your first reader? Do you have one?
Well, Bob probably was.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I was doing writing, all my jobs with the city and agencies and things like that. I did articles for newsletters,
different.
You know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
In my 20s, I was a stringer for one of the papers, you know, that kind of writing.
Yeah.
But I hadn't really done serious writing until mid-60s.
Well, and then the Chicago Sketches was your first book. I think you were on the mm-hmm. show talking about that. This is, you were, in a sense, with the title at least, begging some comparison with Ben Hecht, who is one of my heroes. He obviously is one of your heroes, too.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
When did you first encounter Hecht, and what was it about him that got under your skin? Or under your skin or into your mind?
Well, yeah, the guy had no filter. He was iconoclastic,
mm-hmm.
and that appealed to me as much as anything else. But I just loved the short, the way, the economy of words,
sure.
the way he could get, you know, in a terse few paragraphs, get a story across.
Yeah, 1001 Afternoons, he did not write 1001 columns for the Chicago Daily News when he was on staff of the Daily News, but he did write a column. There are fictional elements to his. He wrote for a newspaper.
Right, right, right.
There are certain of his columns that read like short stories for
and his autobiography.
Yeah.
Okay. Child of a Century. I mean, it reads like a novel.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because he has a way, well, you're wondering, is this really, he's expansive.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So he just, he pushes it. But, you know, Royko always said that Hecht influenced him.
Sure.
Hecht wrote, I think, about 440 consecutive days for the Daily News.
Yeah.
440 consecutive columns.
Yeah.
No time off.
I know.
Yeah, amazing.
Well, no time off, and he was also, you know, a very active on the literary scene in Chicago.
Absolutely.
On every other scene in Chicago.
The Dill Pickle Club.
He is everywhere. Something of a lovely miss. It's like he never slept.
Right.
I mean, that's one of the things. Richard Reeder is in here, and we're talking about his book, 1001 Train Rides in Chicago, that contains 64 stories, 8 from each of the lines, orange, pink, purple, yellow, if you don't know them. One of the interesting things, brown and green, is there are not many people. We all sort of live in our own sort of very confined spaces. There are not a lot of people who travel all of these routes.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You get up, you go to your L, you go to work, right. You come back. You've done them all.
I'm an expert on the red and the brown.
Yeah.
But I had to take a few times. I had to take the pink to the end.
Sure.
You know, the western suburbs, and I took the orange down to Midway.
Yeah, the orange is a fascinating. Yeah. I find the orange fascinating. Chicago seems to be getting more and more sophisticated and upscale. The orange is still really a true, I think, Chicago one.
And
it has some people going to the airport.
Oh, yeah, course, yeah,
but,
yeah.
But.
And when you look out of the windows, Rick, you see neighborhoods, and you see neighborhoods in transition.
Yep.
And Chicago has transformed itself tremendously.
You will meet 64 fascinating characters. When we come back, I will read to you Richard Reeder's story about a man named James Collins. We will be right back.
Was in the town of Jacksboro in the spring of 73. A man by the name of Kriego come stepping up to me. Said, how do you do, young
fella? I'm playing, hoping to inspire you tomorrow when you have a Labor Day picnic and say, and your kids say, what's Labor Day all about? Maybe you could get this CD and play it for your children, Pete Seeger's American Industrial Ballads. Here, ladies and gentlemen, is a Rick Kogan sort of cold reading of one of the 64 short chapters from Richard Reeder's very compelling and insightful at its best, very poetic, 1001 Train Rides in Chicago. This is James Collins. Each time James Collins rides the Green Line downtown and back, he makes sure to take a seat on the train facing north. He always likes to look out the window in that direction so he can view the fenced-up, empty space that once housed the Brock's Candy Factory on Cicero Avenue. James worked there from 1980 until 2002, when he was terminated along with everybody else because a foreign company had bought the company and decided to shut the place down for good. His job for most of those years at the factory was as a mixer of the popular Starbright mints. James was a strong man, and he had no problem lifting the heavy vats when they had to be cleaned. He took pride in his work. Although the job would never make him rich, he and his wife were able to buy a nice little stucco house in the Austin neighborhood to call their own. When the layoff came, his union told him that the city of Chicago would provide him with a retraining program, which would upgrade his skills for new employment. He was sent to a place that looked like a welfare office, plopped down on a seat by a computer and given a book to learn something about Microsoft Excel. For a guy like himself, 52 years old at that time, someone who never finished high school, he felt uncomfortable and out of place, like a fish out of water. He thought that this promise of retraining seemed like a bunch of BS that was not going to lead to a new job for him. and his doubts proved to be correct as his working days ended abruptly after the Brox closure. Nowadays, James manages to get by with a small pension from the Teamsters as well as Social Security. To keep himself occupied, he goes downtown every now and then to get out of the neighborhood, which has been shot to hell for the last 10 years or so. He likes to go to the big library on State Street, named after Mayor Washington, where he reads the papers and magazines. He also enjoys strolling around downtown, although he's bothered by seeing so many panhandlers. He wonders if some of them were laid-off workers like himself, who never managed to get back on their feet. On the train, when he passes the old Brock site, sitting desolate and bare, he can't help reminiscing about the good old days when the factory was humming full steam, joking around with his co-workers and walking away proudly every 2 weeks with a paycheck in his hand for a job well done. Sometimes he even wipes away a tear with his handkerchief when the train rolls by. It's a nice piece of writing, my friend. That's a nice piece of writing, and it certainly captures, you know, if one it will pull themselves away from their device long enough to look, you'll see James Collins.
Absolutely, absolutely. There's, you know, just the I'm trying to paint faces, you
yeah.
know, and that just erase anonymity among us.
Yeah. Well, that's why I think it's a very shrewd. It must have been hard. It's hard to come up with names. That's all fiction writers are like stuck with for names.
They just but, sort of come.
I know, but I know, but do they really? Because I think I really think it's a very good idea to give these all of these people, because we do live in a world where people are faceless. They don't look at each other.
Right.
They don't communicate.
And I try to be representative of the population of Chicago.
Yeah. Oh, you do a great job of that too. Are you one of the things in reading this? And you can read this, you know, literally, ladies and gentlemen, in a couple of very pleasant and moving hours. Should one come away from this book hopeful for Chicago, or sort of? I did not.
Hopeful. Well,
but the future of Chicago.
Well, I'm hopeful. I could have depicted negative characters. I could have. There's a lot of bad things going on in the CTA, which I didn't want to get into.
Yeah, I agree.
So I think basically I'm a hopeful person.
Yeah.
And you want to see the best in people.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to see things turn around. So I think what I'm trying to convey is be more sensitive, be more humane, try to understand what people are going through, I'm hopeful. I'm always been kind of the cup is half full rather
sure.
than half empty.
Sure.
So I listen. What's the alternative if you're not hopeful?
Well, you can be, you know, pessimistic. I don't want to say without hope, because I think there's always hope. But you really do a marvelous job of getting not every type of person who lives here, but the variety of it. Because, again, too many people, and I think this is true, I think one of the great things about the L and mass transit in the old days is you were with a variety of people, and now you are simply with yourself.
I
think that is so true. When you observe, that's one of the reasons Studs Terkel didn't have a driver's license, but that's one of the reasons he liked to ride the bus and he liked to take public transportation.
And Studs used to talk to the cab drivers.
Talk
he would
to everybody.
Just to anybody, you know, when he was riding that bus, he would talk to people.
Sure.
Reading the newspapers, talking about the articles in the papers. Nobody reads newspapers nowadays.
Tell me about it. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they read them if they, you know, many people, they're still... A lot of people get the Sunday Tribune, but a lot of people read newspapers on their phone or their iPad or something.
Remember the people that waited daily for the Royko columns?
Oh, my God.
And then the talk around the water cooler in the office about Royko?
Sure. It's a changed world. Now, you told me that you do readings at Max and Benny's and have been doing readings and putting on literary events there for the last 8 years.
The last 8 years.
Hey, how could I not know about this? How could I not know about this? When are they?
They're Monday evenings, usually about
every Monday?
No, once a month. Usually the third or fourth Monday of the month. And it's been fantastic. We've had
Scott Turow twice,
right. You've had some of the people on your program, Ron Balson, four times. Ron's going to be coming on for the fifth time.
Right.
Lori Levy.
Oh, good old Lori.
So a lot of your...
Ron's one of the great publishing stories of all.
Oh, Ron's terrific.
Yeah, and a wonderful guy. His new book is coming out shortly. But people go there; they have dinner.
People go there, have dinner, and then the author gives a presentation.
Now, are you giving a presentation?
I'm giving a presentation on 1001 Train Rides in Chicago, September 24th at Max and Benny's.
Wow.
Yeah, and that's. Coming up in a few weeks.
Now, they have a website, Max and
Benny. Oh, yeah, Max and Benny. So the event's going to be posted this week. So if you go to maxandbennys.com, whatever, yeah, you'll see it in upcoming events.
That must be such a joy for
you.
Yeah. Now, when you have other authors, guest authors, do you interview them? Or they are allowed to just do what they want. Scott Turow can do.
They do their own thing.
Scott can do whatever he wants to do. And you're also teaching a course
at the Newbery. I'm teaching a seminar on Philip Roth's American Trilogy, sometimes known as the Newark Trilogy.
Yeah.
Three novels. Philip Roth should have won the Nobel Prize for Literature.
Yes, he should have.
He really should have.
Yep.
So that course begins on September 25th at the Newbery. Registration is still going on.
Newbery.org.
Yeah, and I'm teaching three classes at the Oakton Community College Emeritus Program, starting also in late September. Registration is going on. One is on James Joyce's Ulysses.
Mm.
The other is on Ben Heck's 1001 Afternoons in Chicago.
That's a lively one.
Yeah, well, and I'm also doing Philip Roth's American Trilogy there.
Wow, you are a busy man. Again, the book is locally published by Eckhart's Press, which does a really nice job.
And you want to give Eckhart's how to spell it, because a lot of people, so when they order the book...
I just think if they Google 1,000, it's number 1001 Train Rides
in Chicago
by Richard Reeder, and you'll find it.
You'll find it.
And just say a few words in the minute you have left about this fabulous illustrator with whom you've worked. I mean, this is an amazing cover, frankly.
Yeah, that's Leonid Osseny. Ossenny.
Yeah,
and I met Leonid of all places. So Leonid, it's interesting how life intersects. So back in 1989-1990, I was the supervisor of the Russian refugee program for Jewish Vocational Service, and at that time, Leonid was a client recently arriving from the Soviet Union. So he was coming in to America at that time. I first met him at the Irish American Heritage Center.
Oh, for God's sake.
Yeah, because he did these wonderful illustrations on James Joyce's book Ulysses.
Wow.
And he was having an exhibit there.
Oh.
And I saw this man walking into the door, a very artistic-looking man. Of course, I thought he was an Irish artist.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. And I opened the door for him, and he walked up the stairs. I walked up the stairs. It turned out we were going to the same place to see his studio. And he and I became not only great friends, but collaborators now in two books.
It's a match made in some kind of literary heaven. Richard Reeder, you can also read him at A Literary Reeder, spelled R-E-E-D-E-R, .wordpress.com. It's great to see you, my friend.
Rick, thank you for having me.
Congratulations.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
It's a really very, it's Chicago.
It's Chicago.
It's Chicago. We'll be back with some and talk some jazz for an hour after... After the news, Steve Cochran Show celebrates the most valuable person on the planet weekday mornings at 7:20 on 7:20 WG in Chicago. He was just telling us we're going on the air. Welcome back to the show. It is my great treat, but the only four people I know who would come in at 10 o'clock on a Sunday night are jazz musicians. Isn't that great? They're sitting here. Two are, you're all old friends, except for you, the man who doesn't want to talk because he's a drummer, and he says, "I know no one wants it." Why do you think that is, Erwin Berkowitz? Here, come here.
Oh, you're putting me on the spot.
I am putting you on the spot.
My God.
Look, you're a performer. You've been on stage before. Why do you come in and say, "Well, no one wants to hear from a drummer"?
Because drummers are used to being in the background.
I don't think that's true. You're not in the background at this upcoming show, which sounds so... Mark sent me an email, and I jumped all over it. Two couples, two pianos, too much fun. Next Sunday night, right?
That's right.
Hi, Becky Mintz.
Hi, dear.
Hi, Mark Burnell. How Ann Burnell. How did this show come to be? What's the seed of this? How did this happen?
Becky and I are old friends, and we admire each other's playing. And a couple years ago, we started talking about, why don't we put together a show and find two pianos? Now, that was the tough part.
I wanted to stand up and sing with a piano player I trusted. And because
and
we
the,
don't...
And then that piano player said, no, sit down and play.
So then it ended up being Mark. But no, I really wanted to show, because so often Mark and I play for other people or we sing at the piano.
Oh, yeah.
And occasionally we were over to their house one time for a little birthday party for somebody. And you know, we'll grab a chair and we'll play, you know, piano duos.
And then you decide, well, we need a venue. I want to talk. I want you each to talk about pianoforte, because I think that is one of the great underrated venues in this town. It's kind of, would you all agree, it's kind of a secret kind of venue? I've seen
hopefully
some
not
show.
For long.
It's no. Amazing. As of next Sunday night,
it would be
world famous. As of next Sunday night, everyone will know about it. But it really is just a special place. Did you have a hard time figuring out where to play, where to do this unique concert?
Well, if it only had one piano, we'd be sitting on the bench and fighting over the tops and the bottoms, and I don't know.
We would fight anyway, but this has two, one, there's one 7-foot grand that is like butter. It's such a beautiful piano. And then a really wonderful 5-foot grand. So we're both going to be on grand pianos. And then we bring our spouses in to do other stuff.
And Erwin will be at the back where no one can see
him. Erwin's singing.
He sings, so all four of us sing.
We all sing. Mark plays percussion. Ann and I sing a duet.
Yes.
Ann sings a solo. Everybody sings a solo. We duet with each other. I play shaker.
What sort of music? I mean, is it going to be jazz? I mean, you are all
lots
at the
of
top
jazz.
Of that game.
Uh-huh.
But in choosing the sort of evening's musical narrative, how did you toss around that? Because it's really nice that you're all friends and stuff, but when friends sit down to say, okay, we're going to do this, and then we're going to do this, and the other friend says, no, we're not, we're going to do this, and we're going to do this.
Well, the nature of it is the two couples, two pianos, our logo is like two hearts. And so it's really about love and relationships and you know, going in and out of that. Dysfunctional love.
I'm picking a dysfunctional love song, a Paul Simon song.
We have all kinds, yeah.
Have you rehearsed yet?
It's been great.
Oh, we're anal, yes, of course.
But you guys are all such pros. I'm going to keep you on if you can stay till a quarter to 11 and talk about life and especially this concert. I think this is, have you ever seen, you have all been around and you've all been around in the music business. Have you ever seen anything quite like this before?
I think it's going to be an event for our. We're not really Ferranti and Teicher because the show is a little pop too. Yeah. Thank God.
Thank God. That was my kind of music.
Yeah, our audiences, they're going to see something that they won't get a chance to see very often by nature of the excellent pianos at Pianoforte.
Yeah.
And by nature of the mix of the show, because we're doing pop and we're doing a little jazz,
and it's probably jazz influence on the pop. I mean, one thing that I really like about Becky's playing, and I try to do it too, is we don't play the songs the way they're written. We just, jazz them up or do whatever we want.
Bastardize them.
Yeah. There you have it.
Or we do mashups too.
We have
those songs going on top of each other. So we kind of morph into another song for a moment.
And you, Erwin, of course, can adjust to anything they do, correct?
Absolutely.
Well, Erwin is singing a mashup. He's singing Eric Clapton?
Eric Clapton.
Tune with an old jazz standard.
Wow. Wow. Let's talk for a while, a little while, about what bring you have all become deciding to become a professional jazz musician is first of all, it's an unbelievable creative leap, I think. It is also a deeply emotional leap, because I don't think any of you have done this to, you're not pragmatists about it. It's not like, oh, yes, I can do this, and then in 3 years I'll be in Carnegie Hall. There's something deeper for each of you, I think, as I know you. It's the joy of the creative process. It is certainly the joy of performing. Could I ask even you, you can sit, Erwin, for a little while and start thinking about this. And let me start with you. I basically know how you came to music. I know a little bit about this, but talk about that, would you?
How I came to music?
How you came to music and how you stay with music.
I studied to be an actress, and when I came to Chicago, I decided I wanted to sing because I heard some great pianists at a restaurant. And then, I don't know, some guy from the Tribune was there one night.
Yeah, I know. I started this. I had to blame for this.
Yep.
Like an idiot. I never forget I was there with a piano player named Al Blatter. Yeah, anybody remember him?
Oh, I remember Al.
You do? Mm-hmm. And we were the judges of a contest, and a singing contest, and we were having cocktails as we were really used to do in those days. And Anne won the contest because we did think she was the best singer, and she came up and said, "Thank you guys so much. I just quit my job, and I'm going to become a professional singer." And I went, wait a minute. We've had 13 cocktails here, hon. I could not be happier than it's all worked out and that you found Mark.
I was a terrible waitress.
When did you and Mark meet? I know you've told this story on the air, but I find it...
I think it was 1990... One? I don't know.
Three. 93. It was actually right there across the street on Navy Pier.
That's
she was
right.
singing on the Spirit of Chicago.
And Mark was the substitute for the substitute piano player. So I thought he was really cute, and I asked
him.
He is
really
cute. Yeah, he's
kind of cute. He's kind of cute. You all are, actually.
And so that's how we met, and he asked me out to hear Buddy Charles that night. So we went on our first date.
Well, that would have been a gimme good. That's tall here.
Right. I figured if she didn't want to hear Buddy Charles, it wasn't worth my time.
It wasn't worth dating. Yeah.
But I think what's more interesting is when I first met Becky.
Okay.
Because both Mark and I met Becky before we met each other. I think I met you at the Gentry.
On Rush Street.
Yeah.
No,
I don't remember that. I remember going to hear you sing at my place four, and you were rocking out on these great pop contemporary songs in this restaurant that smelled like Greek cheese or something. And I loved those evenings. I just listened, and the audience, sometimes in restaurants, they don't listen, and they were all listening, and so that's what I remember more vividly about you.
Erwin, not to put the arm on you, but how did you meet Becky?
We met the way people our age meet, which is online.
Which is in a hospital room. which is in the intensive cardiac care ward. You did.
We met online, and the only reason I got a second date is because she knew my sister.
Rona Friesen is my sister-in-law.
The great Rona Friesen, and one of the great, married to one of the great lyricists of all time,
as
Julian
Friesen. Julian will tell you that, too.
Have all of you, or any of you, thinking of Rona and Julian, have any of you played the Acorn Theater?
Yeah, Tom and I have played every year that they've been open.
Yeah, because this show sounds like a perfect thing for David Fink in the Acorn Theater.
It would have been. They had Dorothy Field's old piano there,
mm-hmm.
And they used to have two grand pianos, but they don't anymore.
Okay. I am here for almost the entire show with Becky Menzie, Mark Burnell, Ann Burnell, and Erwin Berkowitz, two couples who are going to be doing two pianos, two couples, too much fun next Sunday at Piano Forte, which is an amazing place. You guys are great. You know how much I admire all of you and have for some time. Erwin, I don't know you that well yet, but I like you.
Take our word for it.
The admiration will come in about 15 minutes, but I like you, so that's a good thing.
Yeah.
But I so I can vouch for that. Also, if you've never heard of these performers, they're worth going to see because this pianoforte place is one of the most intimate listening rooms I've ever seen. We'll be back after a short commercial break.
Out of the tree of life, I just picked me a plum. You came along and everything started to hum. Still, it's a real good bet, the best is yet to come. Is yet to come, and babe, won't it be fine? You think you've seen the sun, but you ain't seen it shine. Wait till the warm-up's underway. Wait till our lips have met. Wait till you see that sunshine day. You ain't seen nothing yet. The best is yet to come, and babe, won't it be fine?
That is the one and only Becky Menzie, who performs with Becky. You may be one of the great born collaborators.
I love to collaborate.
Why?
Because I feel that you can always learn from somebody else. The people who don't collaborate sometimes don't continue to grow. They stay in their own.
Interesting.
For me, I so it's about the interaction, how you play off of somebody else, how you listen. I have a girls group that I work with, which is Laura Freeman, Marianne Murphy Orland, and myself. And we've toured around the Midwest. And then Tom Michael and I have been together 20 years.
Are you kidding?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah,
that's my other husband. He's my musical.
Yeah, Irwin, how do you feel? I wonder, Irwin, how do you feel about Tom Michael?
Oh, Tommy is one of my close friends.
Like your son.
Yeah.
Tell me and the listeners about what's your background, musical background?
1964, I saw the Beatles perform on Ed Sullivan's show, and I said, I want to be a drummer.
Wow.
And I was lucky enough to have a cousin who was the head of the percussion department at Northwestern, and I studied with him. And played drums all the way through grammar school and high school, concert band, all that stuff.
Rock and roll stuff? Or
rock and roll, jazz, stage band. I mean, basically every kind of music. And then actually in the 70s played full-time in a disco band because that's the
that
music
was what
you
was
could
selling,
play.
Yeah.
That's where you could play full-time. Everywhere. South suburbs, northwest side.
Yeah.
There was a place called the Bitter End that we were at all the time around Belmont and Central. These were clubs that went from like 9 till 6. And you paid your dues. I mean, you hear about musicians paying your dues. I paid my dues.
Yeah.
Now, the thing about pianoforte is that Irwin has gotten into not only doing rock and roll drumming on a trap set, but he has kind of created his own alternative percussion kit, which...
We were in Hawaii and saw this guy playing this really interesting setup. And he was sitting on a cajon, which is like sort of a box with a hole in the back and has some snares attached.
Yeah.
And he had a foot pedal that was making it sound like a bass drum. And then he had this other kind of drum in the middle that sounded like a snare drum. And he had a mark tree, which is like chimes, and the cymbals and a hi-hat. And it sounded like a drum set, but really different.
And Latin drums adding in. So that's what he does for some of the cabaret, and that's what he'll be doing at pianoforte, is playing this really alternative percussion kind of unit.
Irwin and his toys.
Irwin and his toys.
What are you going to sing?
So
is this the first time? Why don't we pretend this is the first time he's singing it?
Well, this is the first time I'm doing any kind of show like this.
He's sung at Paterino's and he's sung in bands.
But what I'm doing is a mashup of Eric Clapton's Wonderful Tonight.
Yeah.
And Honey.
Dorothy Fields and Jerome Kearns.
I'm sorry, I just went blank on the other song.
The Way You Look Tonight.
The Way You Look Tonight. So it's wonderful, The Way You Look Tonight is yeah. what I've called it. And it's a Becky Menzie creation off of an Irwin Berkowitz idea.
What? Well, isn't that trademarking?
There you go.
You guys, just seeing the four of you together reminds me of what an incredibly kind of nurturing and familial thing is Chicago jazz and cabaret here. And even as venues come and go, the family seems to, the extended family seems to stay together. Mark, why is there not the kind of backbiting and jealousy that exists in, I can speak for the Chicago literary community, at least. I know there must be some. I mean, there must be some.
Oh, it's
but generally,
sure.
But... I know, but generally, I have found this scene, the jazz and cabaret scene in Chicago, to just be filled with people who love to help other yeah. people.
It's very nurturing, and the Midwestern feel or vibe reminds me a lot of Pittsburgh, where I'm from.
Yeah.
And completely unlike New York, where it's, you know, it's very, very competitive. And stressful. But here, the players have been really helpful, and it's a great family.
Well, you know, I also think that that is a lot that allows many players to continued creative growth. Like, you think of a guy like Bobby Lewis, who is still playing, deep in his 80s, but certainly into his 80s at Andy's. I mean, Bobby is as lively and creative as I could imagine. Do you think?
And same with Ramsey Lewis. I did hear him close the set on Saturday. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Ramsey Lewis, don't retire.
There's just something in the water. Yeah. Again, these fine folks are going to be, it's called Two Couples, Two Pianos, Too Much Fun. Becky Menzie, Mark Burnell, Ann Burnell, and Irwin Berkowitz. Was there any argument about the billing of this?
We talked about it. I think you did the design of the card, and then I've just used it, but... Ann and I are the administrators. We're kind of the
task. We're done.
Okay, this has to be done. And the boys are going, oh, that's fun.
Now, many of you listening have heard these three. Maybe you're the, you know, they've probably heard you.
That's right.
But you've fought stardom your entire career. I just wanted to hear a little more. We gave Aubrey some CDs. What do you want to hear?
Well, we're going to feature... some acapella, and so let's play an acapella number, Honeysuckle Rose. It's on the Little Things We Do Together CD, number 2.
This is a sample of what you'll get. And tickets are ridiculously inexpensive for this thing.
$30.
That's crazy.
Yeah, and you can have drinks before and after. There's
come drunk. We're delighted if you come drunk.
Come drunk. We're used to it.
That's our careers.
No one will be allowed in sober because we're used to people drinking.
The more you drink, the better we sound.
How's that coming, Aubrey? He's getting it ready. Here you go, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you.
When I said I needed you, you said you would always stay. It wasn't me who changed, but you. And now you've gone away. Don't you see that now you're gone, and I'm left here on my own, that I have to follow you and beg you to come home.
Have no use for other sweets of any kind since the day you came around. From the start I instantly made up my mind, sweeter sweetness can't be found. was so sweet. Can't be beat. Nothing sweeter ever stood on feet. Every honeybee fills with jealousy when they see you out with me. I don't blame them, goodness knows. Honeysuckle rose. Ooh, when you're passing by, flowers droop and sigh, and I know the reason why. You're much sweeter, goodness knows. Honeysuckle rose. Don't you buy sugar. You just have to touch my cup. You're my sugar. It's so sweet when you stir it up. When I'm taking sips from your tasty lips, seems the honey fairly drips. Your confection, goodness knows. Honeysuckle rose.
Next Sunday night at 7 o'clock, you can hear that voice. You can also hear the voice of Becky Menzie. You can hear, are you singing, Mark? You're going to sing.
Singing a ton.
You're going to hear Becky and Mark on piano. You're going to hear the great Erwin Berkowitz on drums and singing. We'll talk more about that specific show when I come back with these lovely four people after the news. Okay, we're back. We have a few more minutes, maybe like 20 minutes, with Becky Menzie, Mark Burnell, Ann Burnell, and Erwin Berkowitz. They're going to have what will be. I'm not even pretending it's not going to be a sensational event next Sunday at 7 p.m. at Piano Forte, 1335 South Michigan. It is titled Two Couples, Two Pianos, Too Much Fun. We've been having a lot of fun in here. It is basically, and the reason to go is because basically will then lend itself to a million different musical surprises. It is basically Mark and Becky on piano. Mr. Berkowitz here, which I'm now calling you Mr. Berkowitz, the legendary drummer, following in the footsteps of his one-time idol Ringo Starr. I hope you were listening 10 minutes ago. You'd get that reference. He is going to sing and play percussion. Ann Burnell is going to sing, which is what she does. Becky and Mark are also going to sing. You guys seem, I'm not going to say inordinately excited about this, but really excited about this.
We are pretty jacked about this show.
It's going to be fun. Make good music with
nice
people.
We haven't released any of the information of what songs we're doing, so it'll be a total surprise. Except,
I've told a couple of people a couple of songs.
It's a nice mix of well-known songs and not so well-known songs.
Yeah. That's perfect. And some will be. Are you going to do any a cappella stuff?
Oh yes, we are definitely doing some a cappella.
The three of us are starting off with an a cappella thing, and then Anna and Mark are doing an a cappella number.
One way to get tickets to this is to go to a couple websites. I'm not going to read the really long one that Piano Forte has, but you can call Piano Forte at 312-291-0000. What a great phone number.
Wow.
Like a private eyes number. Yeah. Private eyes number. 312-921-0000. You can go to that square up thing, but I would better you would go to markburnell.com or beckymenzie.com.
Because you have to spell Becky, B-E-C-K-I-E.
What? That's not your. What is it? What's the other one?
Burnellmusic.com.
What did I say? Oh, it's not markburnell.com?
I think it'll go there anyway.
Yeah. See, you know, I'm such an, I can barely tell time, frankly, and working the internet is impossible for me. It's Burnell Music. Burnell. Well, I think I never will be a drummer. I think we can rest assured of that. You have no competition. Burnell Music. .com or Mark Burnell, BURNELL.com, Becky, BECKIEMENZIE.com. Okay, give the people a sample of what they're going to hear. They're saying Aubrey had all these CDs, and these fine people are going, oh, we'll sing, we'll sing, we'll sing. This will eventually be the WGN Music Studio. This will be actually the first. This is the inaugural performance.
Oh, there you go.
We're starting it now. Can I have enough, please?
Bum ba dum bum 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 ba dum ba dum bum 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 ba dum ba da ba dum bum bum.
Ooh, let's fall in love. Why shouldn't we fall in love? Our hearts were made of it. Let's take a chance. Why be afraid of it? Oh, let's close our eyes and make our own paradise. Let me know, still we can try to make a go of it. We might have been meant for each other to be or not to be. Let our hearts discover. Let's fall in love. Why shouldn't we fall in love? Now is the time, while we are young. Let's fall in love. Let's fall in love.
Let's fall in love.
Let's fall in love.
Wow. That is but a sample of what you'll hear next Sunday night. How old, 7 o'clock? How long is the show? I mean, is it no break, just straight, solid, good music for an hour and a half?
Hour 10 in that area.
This, obviously, if it goes as well as I think it's going to go, if Irwin steps up to...
Only hope.
If he steps up and his singing matches yours...
Irwin steps up and no one falls down.
This has... Do you guys ever think, wow, this might have some real potential here?
I don't think you ever really know. I think what you do is you just try to, make great music and try to get an audience there, share your music, and then the opportunities that are going to happen. For me, it's been the surprises that have things. When I try to plan something, I think it's going to be really, an event or going to sell. It's the surprises. And so if you just show up
Karma.
And do your best... Mm. I think you just put together a great show and have a great time, and the universe is going to tell you.
Well, you know, it's like Mondays at Pettorino's. I mean, who could have expected? I interviewed you and Denise when it started. I mean, it's been 11, how many, 11, 12 years?
We finished 11 years. So we just, and Rich gave us a 6-week contract.
That would be Rich Melman.
Guessed. It's been a ball.
Yeah.
Denise McGowan, I think it's because of Denise McGowan Tracy.
Yeah.
She's something.
What about venues in Chicago? We have all been around long enough to see many, many come and go. Could you give me, each one of you, in your own individual way, a state of the jazz cabaret scene in Chicago, sort of a state of the union? Mark, what do you think?
Well, there's certainly not as many clubs as when I moved here in 89.
Yeah.
And a lot of the people that I knew that were full-time musicians are now, doing it part-time, but...
Not you.
But not us.
I've been doing it full-time my whole life, so
I'm at the Tortoise Club.
Very grateful. There's a club right next to the House of Blues called the Tortoise Supper Club.
Oh, sure.
And I've been there since it opened 6 years ago.
Wow.
And I have a drummer and a bass player, and we play every Saturday from... 8:30 to midnight.
That's a nice gig. That's a nice gig.
It's a 7-foot grand there, too, so it's a real piano.
It's a beautiful restaurant, too.
It is.
When we talked about Maxime's, there have been clubs at Boombala, and when
that's where I met Becky. Boombala.
And that's
Boombala.
Where I got my first press quote.
Me too.
And it was Rick Kogan. Oh.
Get out of here. And, I've been around way too long.
But boom, those clothes, when Boombala closed, I was devastated.
That was Maxime's, a great club.
Maxime's closed, I was devastated. When Gentry closed, I was devastated. But people love live music.
Oh, no
and
question.
If we can do our best to draw people, new audiences in, because the older audiences are celebrating Rosh Hashanah on Sure Night or something.
They can't drive at night. I can't drive at night anymore.
But if we can draw new audiences and do our job and continue to have fun in our job, there will be places to make music. But it's harder. Some of our friends are not working full time. Mark and I are really lucky.
Lucky.
Yeah.
And I think it's not just that we can sing and play. I think it's that Mark and I also nurture young talent. We both serve as a musical coach and a musical director for other talent to keep that continuum of kind of sharing our expertise and helping figure out how to do
no
that.
No question. It and makes it more interesting.
And you also push that, as I was saying, that creative. It's not like, okay, I'm going to go do the same thing at the same place. This whole, two couples, two pianos, too much fun is a creative leap.
We'd get bored if we had to do the same. I couldn't conduct Les Mis for a year. I couldn't have that career. I really couldn't do it.
So Becky's part of the, keeping the American songbook alive, as we all are. And it's really kind of a mission statement, really, for all of us, and just to keep that alive and grow new audiences. And she's worked with Michael Feinstein on that.
I'm one of the musical directors and mentors for the Great American Songbook Foundation. And one of its premier events is a high school program that happens in the summer. And this is really Michael Feinstein's dream. But they'll bring in Broadway stars and Janice Siegel from Manhattan Transfer and people that show them how to dress and how to work a microphone. And arrangers, one musical director played for Liza for 18 years. I'm another one of the musical directors. And we take hundreds of kids audition, and we take 40, and they spend a week really learning.
Oh, how fascinating.
And vocal health.
Yeah, you know, Mark did a similar thing with them.
It was at Yale. It was the International Cabaret Conference at Yale. I did that too.
See, I think what's going to happen is the world gets icier and icier with, everything is a tap, write letters, and it's getting icier and people are getting more and more removed, that the nature of live music with an audience is going to become more important.
I think so too.
And if I had any money, I'd open a dozen clubs in this town.
Oh, and just have one. No money.
Yeah, just one. No just one is all you need. Like,
you can just call this Rick's Club right here, Rick's Cafe.
You go, Rick's Cafe.
Well, I'm telling you, when this studio gets up and running up here, you guys will be the first people there. Ann Burnell, Becky Menzie, Mark Burnell, my new friend Erwin Berkowitz. They will be Sunday night at Piano Forte, which is at 1335 South Michigan, 7 o'clock. Call 312-291-0000 for these unbelievably reasonably priced tickets. It is such a joy to see the four of you. Well, it's such a joy to see the three of you. It's such a joy to meet you.
Great to meet you.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, guys. We'll be right back. Welcome back. They're talking in the background, those fine, fabulous people who were here. They're going to be the first people to play in the studio. I guarantee you that when we're all up and musically ready. Over the weekend, if you saw it, it was Friday and Saturday, the John McCain funeral and the Aretha Franklin funeral. And it occurred to me when I'm watching these things, and I watched them both. You also didn't see on TV the funeral for those poor little kids killed in a fire in Little Village. It occurred to me that, and it's not because I'm getting old, it's just that, thousands of people died over the weekend, and there were thousands of funerals. And so it put me in mind of this relatively famous John Donne poem written 400 years ago. It was written actually as a not as a poem, but as a piece of prose, part of a series of essays that British writer wrote 400 years ago. I'm going to read it to you, and then I'm going to play you a song, and then I'm going to get out of your hair. No man is an island entire of itself. Every man is a piece of the continent, a part of the main. If a clod be washed away by the sea, Europe is the less, as well as if a promontory were, as well as any manner of thy friends or of thine own were. Any man's death diminishes me because I am involved in mankind, and therefore never send to know for whom the bell tolls. It tolls for thee. So, for those of you who lost people over the weekend who were not famous and were not, your funerals weren't televised and they were probably very small and they were undoubtedly emotional, here is Aretha Franklin. My little homage to all the people who died in the last week and over the weekend and didn't get the TV treatment. Roger Badish, how goes the book?
I've been writing a lot more.
I know you have.
Yeah, I've been trying to take an hour here, an hour there. I'm working on the City Hall years, five years, with Jane Byrne, Harold Washington. But it's taking a lot of time because I have a handful of notes and memos and stuff that I saved.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
But I had, and then my memory, of course, this is back 81 through 85-ish,
yeah.
86 almost, that I worked there. And there's a lot of stuff I remember, but I need to verify it. So most of my time has been doing research, and now I'm finding other stuff, because there's a lot more stuff on the internet
that
wasn't there, 10 years
ago. But that was, I remember when you talked at length about it during one of our many interview sessions mm-hmm. on the air, and those years, helping Harold installing his sound system.
Yeah.
That should be a chapter on its own. It's like installing Harold Washington's, like going down to Hyde Park and in that fabulous building he used to live in and helping him get his, like, stereo system set up.
And everyone, he had his non-city politicians, non-city government politicians, his kitchen cabinet was there when I walked in. They were all talking. I just finished a section. I forgot. It was, the Queen Beatrix of the Netherlands came to visit during Jane Byrne's time.
Yeah.
And it was not an official state visit, but she threw a huge dinner at Navy Pier. I was in charge of the media coverage for that dinner. I was in charge of the arrival and the press releases, her comments, her speech.
Wow.
And there was an incident that I kind of remembered something had happened. She had had a photographer who had kind of pushed his way into a city job. He was always there. He was just a regular person. Got a city job on her photo staff. And then when the queen and the mayor went into a private back room area to do makeup, whatever, to freshen
up. He went with him?
He pushed his way in, took a picture, and which, of course, now is an international incident.
Of course.
And got fired.
Fun.
And then sued the city for wrongful firing.
Termination, yeah.
And so I knew that had happened.
That's
I knew
a great
the name.
That's a great anecdote.
But then I started reading the stories and the court case, the documents.
Did he win?
Online. No, he didn't win. No, he did not win.
You don't fight
well,
city.
Well, he claimed discrimination.
You can't fight City Hall.
But
you just can't fight City Hall. Oh, I'm glad we got a chance to do this. And I'm glad you're doing it, too. I can't wait.
It's going to be a while. I
know.
Like I said, a recent post, I haven't even touched the first 23 years of my life. I haven't touched a whole bunch of stuff between, Gloria Jean's Coffee, running my own PR agency and getting ready to go back to school and stuff. So there's a ton left, and I'll get around.
It's got bestseller written all over it, Bill.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
My pleasure. That was Roger Badish giving us an update on his ongoing autobiography. Thank you so much for listening. Aubrey Mumpower, I know threw a million CDs at you. Thanks for handling them all with, like, the world's greatest juggler. Ben Anderson, you're the best. You're the best. You keep everything running smoothly. See you next week.